Oh, boy, it's getting juicy. Notre Dame legend Tim Grunhard just tweeted out minutes ago, quote, full report on coaches, changes, and what happened behind the scenes at Notre Dame with Kelly's escape from South Bend. Tune in at 4 p.m. today on the program. So there you go. 4 o'clock today. Get all the inside scoop. He calls it the escape.
The escape from South Bend.
They just showed him in his blue Mercedes hightailing it after that 7 o'clock meeting.
Yeah.
Hightailing it out of South Bend on his way to Baton Rouge. He's already got his Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly's Twitter feed already has him decked out in purple and yellow. It says Colin Baton Rouge across the banner of his Twitter page. It's all ready to go.
Mark Boerichter is here. We're talking some football. We've been in the break, already started talking about these things.
Shocker.
There was a funny one. Lincoln Riley, obviously this is the thing that happened yesterday, or Saturday night or Sunday morning. Who knows when this happened, right? Whenever he says.
You don't take him at his word. He said it happened on Sunday.
Kind of
Saturday.
I don't believe that. I believe that's somewhat lie, somewhat true, probably. But there was a picture of him. You know, they get him out there to SC yesterday. And it is weird that a guy would just take a job without him going out there and visiting the place. I don't know. We'll see. But he's standing there with his brand new SC pullover on and smiling. And so one of the former Oklahoma players, I think it was Brennan Clay, who was a running back, who's actually from California or something, he was a Stoops player. But he says, he was saying, and he's still got, he didn't have a wedding ring on, which is no big deal, so I forgot mine today. I don't know if he wears a wedding ring or not. But the funny part of the tweet was, doesn't have his wedding ring on, but he's still got his ex's shoes on. He had Oklahoma Nike's Jumpman on, right? They weren't Southern Cal ones. They were clearly Sooner shoes.
Yeah, but the school color is actually the same.
Yeah, kind of similar.
Yeah, but the shoes were 100% Jumpman. Crimson and cream, there was no hint of SC stuff on him or whatever, because they hadn't got him the shoes yet, right? So he's standing there with his picture with his SC pullover. And the funny part was, all of these Oklahoma assistants, when they, Alex Grinch and all these guys were, the Norman people were there at the airport when they were leaving, they all had Sooner pullovers on. They don't have clothes. They have, all they have is the stuff they've given them. They just live their lives that way. They're getting on the plane to go to California with a job with their Sooner clothes on. You don't have a plane just shirt or sweatshirt you could wear from something else. What a world. I cannot believe the Brian Kelly thing. I mean, I can't believe the Lincoln Riley. I do believe the Lincoln Riley thing a little bit, because I don't think he wanted to go to the SEC, and I think Oklahoma messed that up. Oklahoma got into bed with Texas and the SEC, and they're reaping what they sow. I get it, okay? So I understand that part. But this Brian Kelly thing, they have a very good chance to be in the college football playoff, and he just walked out on 100 dudes. Unbelievable. Unfreaking believable.
What do you think, Mark?
They don't have a game this weekend. I get that part of it.
Yeah,
but
they
it's not a far-fetched thing. This isn't like, well, seven teams have to lose for them to make the playoffs. This ain't the 2006 Chiefs on that Sunday when
Herm said we didn't back into the playoffs. That
yeah.
I wasn't on that team.
It's not that. This is, they are done playing. They're Notre Dame. They're 10-1. They have one loss to a team that's undefeated, and there would be no shame if they both made the playoffs. This is not some far-fetched thing, and he's just leaving. I can't believe that. I mean, the amount
so
of...
So let me ask you this. When would be a good time for him to leave?
If he was Sunday, after they find out if they're in or not. And if they're in, you don't leave. You stay and say, sorry, I'm going to do this. If LSU, if you'll have me in a month, I'll do it. And I know it's $15 million, blah, blah, blah. This dude was coaching Division II football 15 years ago and has risen to Notre freaking Dame. And if you care anything about those 115 guys and all of the assistant coaches and all that stuff, and the alumni and Notre Dame and all the crap you say all the time, you can't leave until you find out if you're in the college football playoff. And I'm not talking about being in the whatever bowl, okay, because – I get that. Go walk out, do what you got to do.
Right.
But if they're in the college football playoff, you can't leave. It's embarrassing.
Yes. I mean, I understand your point. But I'll say this, that in the business of college sports and coaches, and you had just stepped out when I said this, but in the break, what is the pressure point now in college football is recruiting, right? And it always has been.
Yeah, the early signing day is rough.
And the early signing day is why you're seeing this happen like mm-hmm. this. Because I don't think if the early signing day was not in place like it is now, if it was still the 1st of February-ish, right, when they right. always have the traditional signing day was, LSU doesn't fill this job until, and Brian Kelly doesn't take that job until that happens. That's, I believe.
Until after the bowl, yeah.
I believe that. Or until at least they find out in the college football playoff right. race, for sure.
I agree with you.
You know, this is, we're starting to see now where, because I'm with you on the Lincoln Riley piece, and I know I texted Jake yesterday and said, you know, he didn't have the intestinal fortitude to do it. That wasn't really what I was getting at, but it's, I firmly believe in the Lincoln Riley case, right? And obviously you're an Oklahoma guy that, number one, his agent, of course, was in the mix, right? They're calling. Mm-hmm. If you're at USC, why wouldn't you call, right? It's the same sure. reason why he was rumored at the LSU position, right? Like type of thing. And you're going to look at all options. And as a head football coach at the Division I institution, you're probably telling your representatives and saying, hey, if these four or five jobs open up, I'm certainly willing to listen, no matter what. But I think this all got set in motion, specifically at Oklahoma, when they – to your point, decided they were going to the SEC. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody assumes, especially with Lincoln Riley, that you know his name's been floated out there about going to the National Football League and all these different things. Well, you know, where's that coming from, right? Is it coming from the representatives? Is it coming from people that in the National Football League that are saying, hey, we've identified a younger guy here who, you know, is under 40?
I mean, it has to come from him. If he his agent's not going to say something that he doesn't want out
You'd
there.
Be surprised. You'd be surprised because when I say that, you'd be surprised because the agent's job is to represent you, right? And so you're like, hey, I got to, you know, yeah, give us a call. I mean, he'll listen to anything. But I think we also, because we see all these reports that come out, everybody always assumes, and I say everybody, fans, because it becomes a discussion piece on message boards and everywhere else, that's what that coach wants to do, right? And, you know, I think Lincoln Riley's looking at this going, hey, Oklahoma's going to the SEC. Maybe he doesn't want to go to the SEC, you know, type of thing. And the Pac-12 is a better opportunity for him. And it's still USC, right? This isn't
I can't fault Lincoln Riley.
Yes, yeah, just,
Southern Cal's a sleeping giant. He'll be great out there.
Correct.
It'll all be fine. I got friends who think he's going to stink out there. I said, you're crazy. Southern Cal can be great and will be great because I think he's a great coach. I don't have any problem with that. Oklahoma didn't make the Big 12 the championship
Correct.
Game.
You're just saying the timing of the Brian Kelly thing.
The Brian Kelly thing, can't believe it.
Well, and I'll be
I don't think they deserve to be in the playoff, but someone's going to go right. to the playoff, and they're right there. And they're in no danger of losing this week because they don't play.
I'm looking forward to hearing Grunny's comments on this because, as you know, he's well tied in there, obviously, as an alum. His kids have all. Several of his kids have gone to school there. Mm-hmm. Not all of them.
And been in the program.
They've been in the program. He's got an inside track on, you know, to the players there, right? Because Colin was there previous before, you know, mm-hmm. graduating and moving on to Kansas this year. So it'll be interesting to see what he has to say. But I'll say this also.
These meetings all stink. I mean,
right?
This was a horrible one because, remember, the thing came out last night on the little whatever.
Yeah,
their little teamwork saying, oh, come here at 7 a.m. because he's got to get his ass back down to Baton Rouge for a press conference today. So you're going
to
do this at my time.
This is how, and you guys know this. My father was in collegiate athletics for, you know, 40 years, right, as an athletic director, as a commissioner. And one of the things that you always deal with, you know, coaches leaving to take other opportunities, especially at the NAIA level, Division II level, things like that. The part for me that's hard on this is that, you know, all these reports start coming out, right, last night on this stuff. And even if he's in Baton Rouge at that point, like, you as the head coach, okay, I think where you're going with this, to your point of, I know they may make the playoff, may not, but you have an obligation at that point to tell your team before this all starts coming out, right? And when I say, if you've come to the agreement piece on it, you tell LSU, okay, you're in control then, right? You tell LSU, hey.
Hush it down. Don't tell nobody
nothing.
This is
fine.
I need
if you
want
to do this,
right.
this tomorrow, but I got to fly back to South Bend tonight, I'm going to, you know, if this. You've got an obligation to do that because it just doesn't look good on his part, right? And then you hear the reports
terrible.
Last night he's ghosting everybody at Notre Dame. You see a coach that came out through some other people that said, I just got done in a recruit's house tonight, and now I look like a you know what, like, which happened. It does happen.
That means he's not even talking to his like guys who are supposed to be his.
That's the thing with there, yes. And you know, Brian Kelly's been at Notre Dame now for 12 years, though, right? So if he is going to make a move, or feel like he's going to make a move, maybe now's the time. And again, you don't know all that's going on behind the scenes, right? On things like, you know, he may be looking at it, going, you know. And this is a Notre Dame thing now on the conference side of stuff, right? They last year, quote, joined the ACC during the COVID year, right?
Sort of, right?
But they've never been one that's ever going to want to be in a conference, ever. Now, they've done it in other sports, but football.
I understand the move to go.
Yeah.
I just think, for crying out
loud. It's not a good look.
You know how many,
it's not a good look.
How many coaches are dying to make a bowl game, and much less the college football playoff.
Maybe he knows his team stands no chance whatsoever in that playoff.
Well, yeah. Well, then that's gutless too. If you're just going to leave, let's say they make the playoff, who's going to coach him? And they don't. I mean, that's embarrassing. And what may happen? This would be terrible for two franchises or programs. I'm going to call them franchises. Forget it. They're not programs anymore. Like, what if they go hire Luke Fickell? Is Luke Fickell then going to bail on his team?
Yeah. How incredible would that be to see Luke Fickell is coaching Notre Dame in the playoff against Cincinnati?
He's his own team.
Well, what happens if Notre Dame wins it? They promote one of their coordinators, right, to interim coach.
And they win this thing.
They end up in the playoff.
Which, by the way,
of course, if they make the playoff, they're not going to play until January, right? So
yeah.
They're going to have to make a decision on what they're doing coaching-wise.
I think you're right. I like the idea of the early signing day to just let this stuff for the kids. I like the kids. That's what I liked it for, because they don't want to go through this for six more weeks.
Right.
It's good for the kids to get it out of the way.
Especially the ones that are firmly committed to it.
Right,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's terrible for the coaching search part of it. Because how many coaches have we seen get fired earlier and earlier this year? We've already seen in the Big 12, two early. We've seen USC early. Ed Orgeron got told he was out, but hey, coach it. Come on, Coach O, you get to coach your team throughout the thing. Then they go and make a bowl game.
Yeah.
You know,
same with Texas Tech.
You know? Yeah, Texas Tech made a bowl game.
If Texas Tech had beaten K-State on that day, right, before that all happened, they would have been bowl eligible.
That day. It's wild. I mean, what a world. It's just crazy. I mean, I don't like Notre Dame, but I want them to be in the college football playoffs so bad this year just for this.
Well, it's funny to me because You hear a lot of shaming of players who opt out of bowl games.
Yeah.
And how are you gonna sit there and tell your players, if you're Brian Kelly, it's all about the team. You got to buy in. You got to commit. You got to do all that stuff. And it's like, by the way, bye.
Yeah.
See ya.
I'm not gonna tell you. I would not be mad if he did this next week if they find out they're not in the playoff. But the playoff. This handful of coaches have made the playoff, right? And that's all it is.
Brian Kelly's made the playoff.
Yeah. But, you know, it's Saban and Sweeney and, you know, whoever's at Ohio State and whoever's at Oklahoma. It's just like, you know, like 10 guys have coached these playoff teams, and they all want to do this. And they all want to do this so bad. It's their goal. And you can't even wait 5 days to find out.
What do you think of this OU president saying that we would have liked more notice?
He's an embarrassing joke. Oklahoma's administration was a joke for 15 years when David Bourne was in charge, when they were supposed to keep their mouths shut, and he wouldn't keep his mouth shut, when all the stuff was happening before. You know, we're not going to be a wallflower, blah, 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 all this crap. And then he's gone. And this guy, you can't say that yesterday. You can't say it.
Well,
have
right.
a little
the
self-awareness
yeah,
that you did this. And this is him. This is the level this crap happened in July. And
yeah,
you can't come out and say that.
Here's the other thing with that. The irony of that, right, was hilarious yesterday to me, okay? We would have liked a little more notice. But also, if you're Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley's name is – we just talked about this. His name's been floated out for NFL jobs and everything else. What's the difference, right? Like, honestly, what's the difference? Because he's going to USC? Or is it because, you know, all of a sudden, if one of these other teams in the NFL came after him and he leaves in February?
Well,
know,
the tough part about this, I think Oklahoma fans would be happier if he's going to the NFL.
You
can't take the recruits with you.
Well, right.
And that's what's going to happen. I mean, they had six guys decommit. They've had a bunch of guys go into the transfer portal. Maybe they'll end up out there. Maybe they won't. I don't know. Maybe they'll go somewhere else. The transfer portal is what it is now. I mean, these guys, it's no it's no big deal just to leave and go wherever you want because they've made it good for the players to go do whatever
they
want.
This is why I don't now, like, if we were having this conversation 3-4 years ago, right, I would be much more up in arms about what some of these coaches are doing, right, or feeling worse for the kids and the recruits. You know, like, hey, I've committed, now I'm signed, oh, by the way, now he's leaving, you know, type of thing. That happens all the time. But and it used to, and it was all on the coaches, like, how can you do this? Well, now that the rules have changed in the transfer portal, and it's still, you know, it still can be an awful situation for a recruit who actually signs, and you know, here in the early period that's coming up, and then, by the way, you know, the coach you signed all of a sudden ends up taking a job because the coaching carousel has started, you know, type of thing, right?
And it's spinning,
it's out of their control. But the rules have changed now where these guys can enter the transfer portal as long as they get released, of course, right, and go anywhere and play. It's a different story now. It's a different story. The landscape of college athletics has changed, and it's always going to be this way. I think – I don't know how you change
it. It's swung in a good spot for the players. The players can go do things.
Yes,
that's good for the players.
It's much more – my point is it's much more flexible for them, right, to be able to
coach leaves on them, they get to go somewhere. Right? That's fine. I don't have any problem with that. I got a I can't wait to see Grunny. I'd like to. Well, I'll see him before he gets on the air.
It's just not a good look when you know. You never know. I shouldn't say you never, but you. These coaches, you know, if Brian Kelly's flying to Baton Rouge, okay, we know the reports are out there. They were after Lincoln Riley. If Brian Kelly's looking at it, you know LSU is pretty darn serious about having him be their head coach, right? So if you're Brian Kelly. You can have those conversations, but before anything happens, you're headed back to Notre Dame to say, hey, I'm going to tell my team.
Or at least tell your coaches if they're in some kid's house.
Well, that's the other thing. That's the other thing is, hey, I'm taking a look at a couple of other opportunities.
Text
even
real quick and say,
them,
and say flip the script.
Is, yeah.
We're all going to Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
No, it ain't happening. I like the idea. We would have liked more notice. Yeah, of course you would have. And then what would you have done? Like if Lincoln Riley said right after the SEC news came out, hey, by the way, my agent's talking to USC. How would OU have reacted to that? They'd be like, well, get the hell out of here, man. Like, we're not going to let you coach the whole season if you're about to sign with somebody else. They wouldn't have let that happen. So he's got to keep it quiet. He's got to not tell anybody. Brian Kelly's not going to tell any of his assistant coaches because one of them might take to Twitter and say something and blow the whole thing. He's not going to screw up his $100 million
deal. It's really like, you know, most of the information comes from the agent.
Mm-hmm.
Tells like there's just a couple of guys. I was telling all my friends you know, on Friday and Saturday when all this LSU crap was coming out about Lincoln Riley, I said, don't believe the TigerBait.com guy. He doesn't know. The people who know about these high-level things are Bruce Feldman and Pete Thamel. That, if you see something from them, then okay. And that's exactly how this went down. This is in Brett McMurphy, right? Those are the college football guys who are all tied in with Jimmy Sexton or whoever the big agent is. Watch those guys on these stories about that because they're all just tied in with the agent. Now, I do think, this is what I think, I don't believe Lincoln Riley found out about this on Saturday night at whatever time.
No, of course
I think
not.
He knew before. And I think his agent had probably told some of these writers, this is locked and loaded. Don't burn me on this. You can't tweet a freaking thing until Sunday. And if Oklahoma wins the game, you got to sit for another week on this, right? We got to play this thing, right? So they played it all out perfectly that way.
Well, and the other piece with that, too, the LSU thing, you know, he comes out after it's asked about the LSU thing and said, let me just stop you right there, right? His quote was, I'm not going to be
the next head coach of LSU. The whole time knowing, in my mind, not according to him.
At that point, after the game, he's already seen his phone, right?
He didn't know till later that night when he got back to Norman. He didn't hear a thing. He didn't know a word. He was just sad.
Somehow he knew he wasn't going to coach at LSU, though. How did he know that? How did he know that? Had he had conversations with LSU? How did he know he wasn't going to be the next head coach at LSU?
Because he just wasn't going to go do that. Because you know why?
Because he's in the SEC.
He's in the SEC.
If he was going to do that, he'd stay in Oklahoma. That's exactly it. Why would you move to LSU when you already know you're going to the SEC?
It's wild. This is one of the wildest days I've seen in college coaching.
I'm just telling you this.
Don't worry, Todd. It's early today yet. Who knows?
Well, Notre Dame's got to hire someone. Where are they coming from?
Yeah.
Oklahoma's got to hire someone. Where are they coming from?
7 years ago, I made a career decision that was a fairly big one in my life, choosing to take the play-by-play job with Sporting Kansas City. I was doing baseball at the time. I was working at the University of Kansas at the time, and this offer was presented to me. And I know that my wife and I deliberated on that for weeks.
And it didn't even require you moving.
It didn't require me moving. It was for pennies compared. Yeah. I mean, like pennies compared to what, like, you know, what they're talking about here.
You don't think you get a phone call late Saturday night?
I didn't have to bring a staff with me. Like, I didn't have to call seven other people and go, hey, man, will you come take this job with me if I do this? Like, it was...
Well, you just don't know how to make decisions, Nate. That's your problem.
It just seemed like there were a lot of things to consider. You know, there were a lot of things like, where do I think this, like, why am I making this move? What, you know, what's going to happen here? What's the long-term implications of all this? Like, all those things, like, those things get discussed.
But see, if you're Lincoln Riley, you got to have a play call right now. So you're just ready to make those decisions.
And look, I'm far less organized than most college football coaches. I would think that they would want to really make sure that they line up all of their P's and Q's and all that stuff and make sure everything's right. This man pulled this off after a devastating loss to his arch rival within a matter of minutes.
Yeah. Done.
Let me talk this over with Miss Kelly, and it's going to take a couple weeks for us to make this decision.
Sorry. My wife was going a lot quicker about it than I was. I mean, but my point is, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah.
It's farcical to think this happened in
hours. No,
this is going to change the trajectory of my career. This move I'm about to make is going to change the trajectory of my career. Let's figure all this out, you know?
Look, and I'll buy the argument, too. Like, hey, I'm listening to USC because it's USC. Once we lost Bedlam, all of a sudden, hey, this thing gets accelerated, and it's going... Okay, what's it, you know, the negotiations are happening then. Okay, what's it actually going to take for
that
you to come?
That contract was so written and done.
Well, they had a lot of it, but I think there also is portions of it, though, too, going, okay, if we're going to make this happen, because he's got all the leverage at that point, right? Like, I don't think it was completely done. I think there's probably terms that were agreed to, but I'm sure there was some extra stuff in there, too.
You've been gone for a month.
Oh, yeah.
Been gone for a month.
Easy a month. Minimum. Minimum.
And who knows on Brian Kelly? I don't know. Well, Brian Kelly could have been not quite that long. I don't know. Because I think Lincoln Riley was probably his agent was playing LSU and Southern Cal against each other.
Once
and then when
he made the
choice to go to Southern Cal, then it was Brian Kelly quick.
I kind of buy that a little bit because it's like LSU panicked because they didn't get Lincoln Riley.
And they can't sit there for long.
And so they went to him and said, we're going to smash the record for how much a coach has ever even thought about making in college football.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then it's like, oh, okay.
Hey, by the way, in a state that's bankrupt, so, you know, and just went through a pandemic. The state of Louisiana is a disaster financially, and their state university is a disaster financially. And we've just gone through a pandemic that's ongoing, and they got $15 million for this and $9 million or whatever to give Coach O.
Dude, that's a I struggle so much as a person who's contemplating how much money it's going to cost my kids to go to in-state college. To think about how much, like, we're building $300 million indoor practice facilities at the University of Kansas.
I know it's separate,
just makes you wonder, like, what are we doing? What are we doing? But, hey, it is what it is. We'll take a break. Let's talk Chiefs, because it's Chiefs and Broncos this week. Yeah, yes. That was fun. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All right, let's get into some NFL talk with Mark Boerichter here.
Hold on. I will give you guys one name before we close this out, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Dan Lanning is the defense coordinator
at Georgia.
Okay? He's from Richmond, Missouri.
Local
William
ties.
Jewell grad, okay? Has kind of risen up the ranks. Was that out? It was at Pittsburgh for a little bit as a GA. Went to Arizona State. And then he ended up at Alabama for a couple years.
With Kirby, and then Kirby.
Yeah, they went to Memphis for a year. Then when Kirby got the job at Georgia, brought him over to coach linebackers. I'm the defense coordinator now there for about three or four years.
He's a hot name.
Their defense is decent.
It's okay. Georgia's, I mean, it's okay.
Right. I'm just throwing it out. Keep an eye on that name.
He'll be around.
OU job? Notre Dame job?
I don't know. It depends on what he wants. But I'm just saying his name's going to be out there.
Would you be scared? Bob Stoops was a coordinator before taking the OU job, right?
Oklahoma has not hired anyone in the last 60 years who had been a head coach except for Howard Schnellenberger. Only guy they've ever hired who had been a head coach. Lincoln Riley wasn't a head coach.
A lot of schools seem to be scared to do that.
Bob Stoops wasn't a head coach. John Blake wasn't a head coach. Barry Switzer wasn't a head coach. You know, so
local ties. That's where I was
going. Absolutely. I've seen his name on a lot of things.
I started seeing his name last night, but a year or two ago, I've actually met him a couple times, and sharp dude.
I think they might have had him. I think Stan might have had him on College Game Day once a few years ago. Yeah. He's one of these guys, he's a local guy. Yeah,
I met him a couple times doing some high school games here when he was in town recruiting.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys suffer through that game last night?
I did not.
I mean, I watched kind of the end of it, but
the end of it was good. The end of it was actually entertaining. I mean, they drive down the field, score a touchdown, 2-point conversion.
Bad to say I didn't watch one play of that game?
It wasn't a bad decision on the interception. Fuller just made a nice play coming off. Like, I could see where Russell Wilson was throwing the football and why he was throwing it.
Yeah, Fuller was chasing another receiver, and then he read the quarterback's eyes. Yeah, that was a good play. But before that, Russell Wilson looked terrible most of the game.
2-6 as a starter this year.
Is he still hurt? Or is that just a broken Seattle team?
I think it's a broken Seattle team. I think that's a team that, you know, they've made the playoffs like 10 straight years, right? At some point, you have a little bit of a regression, you know?
Their defense isn't what it was.
Their defense is not what it was. And, you know, I'm a Russell Wilson fan watching him play a lot of times, but, you know, they don't seem in sync on offense. To me, and defensively, they're not very good, and the combination of that, you know, is not a good combination. And you know, they were talking before this game that, hey, we just want to win this game, and then we'll move on to the next one. And they think they can still make the playoffs from the table. They're done. So
yeah, they might. Are they mathematically done?
They're 3-8.
Yeah. Well, they're bad enough. Before even losing last night, that the NFL said, no, thank you. We're going to put the Chiefs and Broncos on Sunday night because that's who got flexed out.
Right.
It was supposed to be them. It looks like the NFL made the right call. Bye-bye, Seattle. You lost Washington on Monday night. And the Broncos went ahead and beat the Chargers on Sunday and made this game coming up Sunday night be for first place in the AFC West, which I did not think would be the case. Well, a month ago, I thought this might have been to see who's in third or fourth place, but the Chiefs have won and the Broncos have won 3 out of 4.
Yeah, the NFL made that decision before the Broncos won this past weekend.
And before Seattle lost again. That was really smart on their part. What do you think about how the Broncos have kind of gotten this done?
Well, they destroyed the Cowboys, right? Was that almost a month ago now? Mm-hmm. I think it was. But they have, you know, early on in the season, they got off to a good start. And the big, you know, narrative was, well, they haven't played really. Right,
they played
very
the
good
Panthers,
right.
Jets, and
right.
Jags.
Yeah,
maybe?
I think
it's
so.
Really bad.
Yeah, but you can only play the teams that are in front of you, right? Right. So,
and we've spent time here talking about, hey, man, the Chiefs won an ugly game against the Giants, but they won. It's the NFL, you know.
Exactly. And so, the Broncos are playing. They have a good defense.
Good defense.
Their formula is this, and Teddy Bridgewater obviously is a quarterback. Is not a world beater by any means, right? And he's not Alex Smith even. He's Alex Smith light, you know, type of thing. They've got to run the football and play within rhythm offensively, right, where they don't ask him to do too many things. And let their defense play good football behind them. And that's their formula for success. And let's not forget that they traded Von Miller away right at the trade deadline also.
Right.
And I think some people looked at it and said, hey, they're throwing their hands up, like, you know, because they lost a few games at that point too. And Von Miller certainly was not a distraction or a problem in that locker room from people you talk to. And so this wasn't a true addition by subtraction piece. But their defense has kind of rallied around team-wise. They've got a good secondary. Patrick Surtain, the second junior, whatever he is, right, is playing really well. But the Broncos are living on that edge of, you know, one of those teams, and every team in the National Football League does this from time to time, and the Chiefs have played on that edge where it's, you know, 2 to 3 plays make the entire game. You know, Justin Herbert throws a ball last week to Austin Eckler, goes right off his hands. Surtain picks it off and goes 65 yards for a pick six.
Game over.
Game completely changed, right? So, when I say that, the Broncos are living on that edge of, you know, a play here or there is either one games for them or cost them games. So there's not a large margin of error for them is where I'm going with this. They have to play really good defense, run the ball, and then not ask Teddy Bridgewater to do too much. And, you know, it's been 6 years now since the Broncos have beaten the Chiefs. And that game was, was that a Monday night game?
6 years.
That was the Jamal Charles fumble in overtime game.
Yep.
Okay, was the last time that they won.
Before overtime.
Before, yes.
Because they,
yes,
were just kind of trying to get to overtime.
Before, yes, it was right before overtime. But that was that game.
That's
right?
The, maybe the most devastating last 40 seconds of a game I've ever seen.
And that was
the Broncos scored. The Chiefs got the ball, kickoff, and it's like they didn't really have time to go to do anything, so they ran a draw play. Fumble.
Who did Peyton Manning pick on all the way down the field? There was like there was one corner he just kept going after.
Maybe
all
Eric
game.
Decker caught the ball. I can't remember who was on the team then. But then the not the, only did he fumble it, they scooped and scored, and it was just like Arrowhead went boo. It was unbelievable how bad it was. And that was the year the Chiefs got swept by the Broncos, but had a better division record than the Broncos.
Yeah, and the Broncos went on to win the Super Bowl. But that's the last time. As we talk about it, it seems like that game was like 2 years ago.
Right? 6 years.
6 years ago. And so, you know, I like the Chiefs, obviously, chances in this coming off a bye week. We all know what Andy Reid's record looks like after a bye week. The Broncos, to me, are a much better team than people have probably given them credit for. But like I said, they just live on that edge. Their margin for error is not as great as
the
Chiefs.
They 100% opened my eyes in that Cowboys game.
100%.
Because the Cowboys, they had everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't score till late third, fourth quarter. I mean, they were shut out.
Yeah, the scores late were garbage scores, basically. For the
so, you know, there's some – you got to credit them on what they've done. Now, they got this six-year mental block going with them right now. It's the same thing the Chiefs had for all those years when Peyton Manning was the quarterback. Well, why can't we beat these guys? What are we going to do, you know?
But the Chiefs defense is playing extremely well, as we've talked about.
That's important. Because I don't think they're going to score a ton of points against the Broncos in this game. Am I wrong about that? I mean, the offense has not been looking great for the Chiefs.
Yes and no. I think that, you know, there's still too many drop passes from time to time. This offense is doing what it needs to do to win games.
Right.
And that's
right.
We've talked about that in here, that this offense needs to morph a little bit in terms of just doing what you need to do to win football games. And they've gotten production. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is back. I was wrong. I said last week I didn't think, you know, maybe they would play him all that much. He looked great. You got fresh legs coming in, okay? Fresh legs at this point.
Even fresher this week, right?
Yes, fresh legs coming in this late in the season is a great thing for your running backs. I think the bye week comes at a good time. You know, I've been asked this. Is this really that great of a time for this bye week with this team playing well in four straight? I think it still is because you got some guys that needed to rest up and you know, get yourself ready to go for the home stretch here. But the defense is playing really, really well. They've seemed to start to figure things out. I'm still not – Frank Clark has played better, okay? But he's still not where he – you know, he's still not a world beater in there. And so people are like, well, he had a strip sack last week. Yeah, because nobody blocked him, okay? He was unblocked. And that
you
happened
could get a strip sack.
Yeah, there was a couple other games that way. He's not consistently winning one-on-one. But that's okay right now because they've moved Chris Jones back inside. I know they're still moving him around a little bit. Jaren Reed's starting to play better. And Melvin Ingram, that addition and just the threat of him being over there, you know, you can't always measure defensive linemen by sacks, right, in terms of their production. It's about pressures and what they're doing. But they're getting more push up front in the middle of the pocket, which is helping, you know, their defensive ends.
Real quickly, I know we need to break, Drake. But I think one of the best parts about this bye week for the Chiefs was it was Thanksgiving, and they didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to come in and do anything like that. Normally, if it's Thanksgiving week and you have a game on Sunday, you got to do something on Thursday. There's a practice or something, right? There's something really nice about actually, for an NFL player, having a true Thanksgiving without having to go in there and do something.
Yeah, and I don't want to put a damper on that because you're right. There is. It's a nice week to have your bye week. Let's wait to see what happens Thursday here because – the NFL changed their protocols this week on the COVID stuff with Thanksgiving. So they tested guys on Monday. This is for all vaccinated players, and they're testing on Wednesday this week as well. We saw the Cowboys and Mike McCarthy, right?
Man.
I'm kind of holding my breath here, guys, right? Because this team had a bye week. They were off the entire week. And I'm not saying guys went out and did stuff they shouldn't do, right, type of thing. We're living in a world now where it's some cases, you know, it's an unfortunate situation, you know, if you get this thing, right? And test, and especially with vaccinated guys with being, you know, asymptomatic, things like that. Let's see what happens here because they got to test tomorrow on this stuff. You know, if they come out clean of this whole thing, great. But to your point, Todd, this is a great week to have a bye week if you're the Chiefs. I really believe that. And I think this team, more than ever, even though they're I'm not a huge, you know, believer in momentum, that this bye week's going to kill their momentum, you know, from what they've done last 4 weeks, because these have been tough games. It takes a lot of energy to get yourself back in this that they've done over the last 4 weeks, and now they've had an opportunity to go ahead and take a break.
Let's take a break. Right after this, we'll talk a little bit about the game itself, Broncos and Chiefs, coming up on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm not sure this is accurate. I heard on ESPN this morning that if the playoffs ended today or started today, the Washington football team would be in at 5-6 in the NFC. But I'm looking here. Okay. Boy, this is terrible. Seven teams make it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they'd be in seventh place. 5-6, tiebreakers over Minnesota, Atlanta, New Orleans.
It's 2 years in a row for them, huh?
Look, obviously there's a long way to go. But then you look on the AFC side, and right now you'd be looking at two teams that are above 500 who would be out of the playoffs, and the Indianapolis Colts and Pittsburgh Steelers and Cleveland Browns, who are all at 500, who would be out of the playoffs as well. 12 teams, Mark, in the AFC are 500 or better right now.
Welcome to the National Football League, right? Like, this is what it's set up to be like. This is what
it's what they always
wants.
Hope for, right?
This is what they hope
doesn't
for.
Always work.
They want. Doesn't always work that way.
Well, the NFC is much more top-heavy. There's like three teams there that are having really good seasons, and then everybody else is a bit of a mess.
And who knows how they'll end up. There's still plenty of games to go. I mean, correct. This thing could shake up. Right now, the snapshot is unbelievable that's the case with that wild card.
Oh, it's going to shake up a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to absolutely shake up a lot, because I look at right now, the Ravens are the one seed. Do you feel great about that?
I don't. I mean, they played a struggling Browns team and barely won the other night. I think the Bengals look like they've kind of fixed themselves a little bit, right?
They look like the best team in that division to me right now.
And they've already crushed the Ravens one time.
Yeah.
You know, Ravens, this was only their second game.
And now they've crushed the Steelers, too.
This was only their second game against the division, I think, this game against the Browns. So Ravens still have a lot of games to go against the division.
There are still 6 weeks to go in the season.
Yeah. this is the biggest NFL season ever, Mark. Did you know that?
I'm aware, yes.
Yeah. It's the biggest one ever.
There's still two bye weeks for some of these teams to come up yet here. Yeah.
All the little math in our head that we are always doing at this time of year is off, because there's a whole other week to go. But no, I don't think the Ravens are the best. Now, listen, they survived. They threw four picks and survived. That wouldn't have worked. They threw four picks against Cincinnati. They're getting beat 41-10 or something like that, which is kind of what it was the last time they played them. And that's part of the calculus for the Chiefs as well. The Chiefs haven't played the Steelers. They haven't played the Bengals. They're playing both of them this year. I think that's one of the things why we're seeing these records be so tight. Because we've just watched the Chiefs sweep the NFC East, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're also playing the AFC North, which is a very solid division top to bottom. Even though the Browns are struggling, that's a good roster.
Right.
And when they played them early, it was a much better roster because they weren't
Baker
beat up
healthy,
and all that.
Yep.
And, all that. Yep. And it was a hard-fought game. They ended up winning it. But these two divisions playing each other, sign me up for these games all year, man. They've been entertaining and fun.
Well, and this is, you know, you see this all the time. With the NFL schedulers, you know, they always have division games down the stretch, right? Because they want the end of the season to be compelling no matter what. And it's shaping up to be that way in the AFC. And you know, if you're the Chiefs, and we've talked about it on the show, but, you know, the opportunity for them to control their destiny, right? It's in front of them. And I've said this ad nauseum. You got all these division games remaining, and two against the Broncos, one obviously here Sunday night. Then you've got the Raiders at home, and then you go to Los Angeles to the Chargers. This 3 week stretch is huge.
Monster.
It's monster. And this game on Sunday is monster. And this next 3 weeks is going to determine whether this Chiefs team makes the playoffs or not. This 3 weeks.
All right, Mark, what's your prediction? Sunday night.
I like the Chiefs 27-14. I think they come out and play well offensively. I think Denver controls the ball a little bit on the ground, tries to, you know, like I said, play in a rhythm for them. But I don't think the Chiefs get to 30 points, but I think they win pretty handily.
So the Chiefs cover, but it's under. Under the 49 number.
I didn't even know what the numbers were.
Well, yeah, it was 49 yesterday, according to ESPN. Now it's 47.
You got a service you can
now
call.
Now it's 47. All right, cool. Well, hey, Mark, thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate that, it.
Thanks, guys. It's good to see you again, as
and,
always.
And have a great week, man.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll be talking to you again next week.
We'll see you next week.
As we get ready for Raider Week again next week. All right, we'll take a break. We'll have Matt Derrick with us next to get all the latest news and information on the Chiefs right after this.